I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third generation Cure Master from S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Foods USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at SurreyFarms.com. Or VirginiaTraditions.com.
All right, it is Thursday at 1 o'clock, and you are tuned into the Heritage Radio Network, listening to the Farm Report, coming to you live from the back of Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, on this beautiful sunny day. We are on the line with David Campbell of Maple End Farm. David, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Awesome. So nice to have you on the line. Now, you are up in Washington County in Salem, New York. What's the weather looking like on your end of the line?
It's sunny and warm here for this time of year.
Good, good, good. So, Maple End Farms, you are a maple syrup farmer. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that? I think, you know, generally when people think maple syrup, they don't necessarily equate that with farming. So, how do you qualify exactly as a farmer?
I would say because it's a farm product, a food product. We actually harvest it from the trees in our woods instead of out in the open fields, but it's actually one of the first farm products of the year.
Excellent. So you are just wrapping up the part of your year where you're actually harvesting the maple syrup. Can you tell us when you guys started actually seeing some sap come out of the trees?
This year, well, there was just a little bit of sap that came out couple days in February, but the first major sap flow started the first week of March this year.
And is that typical, or has this year been a little different?
It's typical, fairly typical. We usually expect first sap flow around the 1st of March in our area. Depends, okay, of course, on your area of the country, of what time of year it does start flowing.
And so maple syrup comes from maple trees. Maybe that's obvious to people, but can you find it anywhere in the world, or is it specific to certain parts of the country or the globe?
The production is basically located in this part of the globe, in the northeastern part of the U.S., the southeastern part of Canada, but it is shipped worldwide from this area.
Oh, really? So how does New York stack up against, I know, you know, you think maple syrup, you think of New York, you think of Vermont. How much maple syrup are we producing? Is New York State up there as one of the larger producers, or?
New York and Maine are usually ranked either second or third as far as production in this country. Most years, Vermont is the largest producer in this country, and then New York typically makes around 400,000 gallons of syrup a year. And the biggest producer of maple syrup is up in Quebec in Canada. They produce probably about 75% of the world's supply of syrup.
Oh, wow. And is that just because there are more maple trees in Canada? I mean, are we at capacity in New York State with what we could be harvesting?
We're way under capacity of what we could harvest in New York State. We could probably actually produce more in New York State than they are producing in Quebec. We have more maple trees, but they are utilizing about 30% of their maple trees, where in New York there's only about 1% of the maple trees being utilized for syrup making.
So what's our problem?
Is
that a bigger conversation?
Years ago, they had some subsidies in Canada that encouraged producers to get into the business, and so that is what brought them to that level of tapping. And it is currently a lot of expansion going on. It's one of the farm commodities where producers are seeing a reasonable return on their investment for other labor and equipment it takes to produce syrup. So there's more and more people getting into it, and the demand is growing every year, and worldwide demand.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about that infrastructure. I mean, you know, let's say I'm me in Brooklyn, I decide I want to be a maple farmer. You know, I can't just show up and, you know, plant a tree and wait for it to grow. What are some of the barriers to entry, or why is it, I mean, what do you need to harvest maple syrup?
Well, first thing you need are the trees. It takes 40 or so years to grow a tree to tappable size, so we're relying on the trees that are already out in the forest. And so that's where you got to start, is with the trees, either owning them, or we lease about 3/4 of the trees we utilize from other landowners.
So
we give them a return on owning the trees and so on.
And is that a pretty typical model for people? So you guys, I mean, this is like your main business, you and your brother.
Right.
So you're able to support two families, right? Year-round,
right,
producing maple syrup.
Yep, that's right.
Okay, and
so once you have the trees, then you need the equipment to do it with. A sugar house to cook the syrup down in, the evaporator, reverse osmosis, complex tubing system. Most modern-day sugar makers have vacuums, pumps hooked to their tubing system to help increase yields. So there's a huge capital investment to get into the business.
Okay, let's break down some of that stuff that you just talked about. So I know when I'm in second grade and they do the maple syrup demo, they put a bucket on a maple tree and we kind of cook some maple syrup on a stove. Obviously, you're doing it on a much larger volume. So let's talk about the taps. How has the tapping technology changed over the last few years, and kind of what's the standard industry-wide?
Well, of course, years ago, you just went out and hung a bucket on the tree, and then you had enough labor to go out and dump all those buckets every day. And with our 8,000 taps on our farm, we don't have enough labor force to empty 8,000 buckets every day, so we're relying on a network of plastic pipes in the woods to bring the sap from the tap in each tree down to a holding tank at the bottom of the woods, and then we have to truck the sap to our sugar house for processing into syrup. And sap typically comes out of the tree looking like water, about 2% sugar, and it takes about 45 to 50 gallons of that sap boiled down into syrup, which is 67% sugar, to make a gallon of your syrup.
Wow, so you're collecting way more sap than you're ending up with kind of a final product of the maple syrup.
Oh, yeah.
And so you mentioned a vacuum system. So, essentially the tubing is doing, has a little bit of a suction action to pull more sap out of the tree?
Yeah, it helps increase our yields a little bit. Typically, you get freezing and thawing weather in the spring that will push this sap in the tree, inside the tree, out of any holes. But if we don't get a freezing and thaw cycle every day and it stays above freezing for a couple of days, we'll still be able to keep harvesting a little bit of sap. So it helps increase our yield per tap that we got out in the woods.
And it doesn't hurt the tree to
No, it does not hurt the tree a bit. We're only putting one little tap hole in the tree and taking maybe 10% of the tree's sap. And once we take that 10% out, the tree just brings more sugar that is stored in its roots up to replenish its sap levels for the development of the leaves come later spring.
Okay, so you have your bins full of sap, kind of this big bin of what looks like essentially water. You load that onto a truck where I'm assuming you maybe have another tank as you go around from kind of site to site to collect.
Right.
You get back to the sugar house and then you're putting the syrup, it gets evaporated in your cooker, but then you said there's also an osmosis process?
Right. We empty the our transport truck into a holding tank at the sugar house, and then it is pumped through a reverse osmosis machine that the sugar molecules in the sap are larger than water molecules. So the water molecules will pass through this membrane where the sugar molecules won't. So we can take out 75% of the water before we start the boiling evaporation process.
And so that means you're essentially just, you don't have to cook it as long.
We don't have to cook it as long, so we're saving some fuel, saving some labor. The reverse osmosis machine can sit there, works with high-pressure electric pumps, and it can be working all day while we're working out in the woods hauling sap or checking for leaks in our tubing system and so on.
Awesome. And then how long does the syrup have to cook for before it's kind of gone from the 45 to 65 gallons into the kind of 1 gallon that we usually see on the breakfast table?
It takes about an hour or two boiling process. The evaporator is set up with a series of channels in the pan, so fresh sap is flowing in one end, and it keeps evaporating off until we get the finished syrup off the other end of the stainless pans.
So obviously you guys are working within a pretty tight time frame as far as harvesting the syrup. You know, you're looking for, like you said, those freezing nights and the warm days, and the sap is really only flowing for a couple of weeks throughout the year.
Usually about 4 and sometimes 6 weeks. I think this year we ended up with about 5 weeks sap flow time.
So when the sap is flowing, it's go time, all hands on deck, right?
That's right, and more sometimes. This year, our longest day, we finished making syrup at, say, around 11 o'clock at night, and just thought we'd go, and it was a warm night, so we went and checked our tanks again before heading home, and they were almost full again. So then we started hauling sap again for a few hours before we caught a couple hours sleep and started in the next day.
Well, and that's the thing about sap, because, you know, basically it's getting collected into these barrels, but they're not held at any kind of temperature. And the sap, because it has a sugar, can't just sit around in warm weather, right?
No, it will start to ferment if it sits around too long in the warm weather. And that's basically what ended our season this year. We got a 75-degree day that the sap just wouldn't keep. And even though we were still getting some sap out of the trees, and the buds are starting to come out on the trees, so the flavor was getting poor anyways. But
so do you notice from day to day a lot of variation in the flavor?
It's a gradual change from the beginning of the season. Usually in the beginning of the season, you make the lighter, milder flavored syrups. And at the beginning of the season, the sap coming out of the tree is a little bit higher than at the end of the season, so it doesn't take as much processing.
You mean higher in sugar content?
Yeah, higher sugar content. So at the end of the season, the sugar content will drop down to about 1%, so it takes a whole lot more sap to make that 1 gallon of syrup and more processing, and it just darkens the syrup, makes for a stronger flavor. And so there's the light, medium, dark amber, and extra dark syrup as table syrups, and then at the very end of the season, it'll sometimes get a little bit of strong, bitter-flavored syrup that'll go into commercial use.
Like for consumption, though, the commercial use?
Yeah, they'll use it for flavorings and other food products.
Okay, so like the Jimmy Dean's, like maple-flavored.
What was that?
Is it like Jimmy Dean's maple-flavored sausage? Or?
Yeah, sausages, okay. Even artificial-flavored maple syrups that have maybe 1% pure maple syrup in. They'll use some of that darker, stronger syrup.
Let's talk a little bit about the grading. You know, there. So you see a lot around, you know, grade B or grade A, and then you were talking about kind of light amber, medium amber. Is it like, you know, my report card where if I get a B, like my parents are going to only give me $10 instead of 20? Or what? How does the system kind of work? And is it a hierarchy like that where one's better than the other? Or
actually, one isn't any better than the other. It's just a matter of individual preference and taste. It used to be that most people were preferring the grade A, light, medium, or dark amber, but there's definitely a growing demand for the what had been called the grade B, but also called Extra Dark in New York, because it does have a good flavor, and it's just darker and stronger flavored.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, I want to talk just a touch more about that before we move on to some more exploration of maple syrup with David Campbell of Mapleland Farms.
Service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to The Main Course Sundays at 12 p.m. with hosts Patrick Martins and Katie Kiefer. They examine issues from the interconnected worlds of agriculture, cuisine, and sustainability. They sit down with key players in the chain from producer to consumer, farmers, distributors, chefs, activists, and journalists. The Main Course explores every important component of the eating experience, how the farmers raise their product, the distribution channels that move the product, how the chefs prepare it, and how ethics and policy affect everyone involved. Again, that's The Main Course, Sundays at noon on the Heritage Radio Network.
Okay, we are back. You're tuned in to the Farm Report on the Heritage Radio Network. We are speaking with David Campbell of Mapleland Farms. So, David, before the break, we were talking a little bit about the syrup grading system, and you mentioned that in New York State, the name is a little different, and I think that belies the fact that you wear more than one hat. I mean, you have your farm, but you're also part of the New York State Maple Growers Association?
Maple Producers Association,
So, tell us a little bit about that organization and what kind of work it does here in New York State.
We represent about 500 members, producers in New York State, and work to help promote the maple syrup use among consumers and all aspects related to it.
Okay, so do you also offer, like, technical support, or if someone was interested in kind of starting out a maple operation, would they go to you, or?
The best place to go would be the Cornell Maple Program. They have a staff of several people there that work directly with producers on issues on how to produce syrup.
So would you say, you mentioned, you know, earlier in the show that New York State is currently only tapping, what did you say, 1% of it?
1%, yeah.
So, I mean, I think, like, it sounds like there's, like, this real opportunity for maple production to kind of be this tool to preserve woodland or to preserve, you know, kind of open space in New York State. Are most of the trees on, I mean, where are, do you have a sense of, like, where are most of the trees? Are they on land that's owned by people who just don't know about it as a potential revenue source, or people who, or is it state land, or kind of, is there
little of everything?
Yeah.
There's a lot of state land, and our association's been working in discussions with state legislators and DEC about the possibility of leasing some of those trees on state land, and DEC doesn't want to oversee that, so that's not really an option at this point. There's a lot of landowners that, well, they may not think that they can. They're managing their woodlot for timber harvest, and they don't want anybody drilling holes and harvesting the sap from the trees every year. But then there's other landowners that don't realize that, well, they could be getting a yearly income from that woodlot, not just once every 10 years or 15 years when they harvest some trees. So it's a little bit of everything that we need to keep reaching out and letting them know the advantages of tapping trees.
And are there any kind of more institutional barriers, like policy-wide or kind of laws or regulations that make it difficult for people to? I mean, your operation, I'm assuming, is it undergoes an inspection from the USDA, or I mean, as a food service, like, you know, because you're kind of producing a ready-to-eat product, like, how does that end of the spectrum work?
We come under Ag and Markets.
Under Ag and Markets.
Yeah, and actually, for syrup producers that are making just the pure maple product from their own land, there aren't any strict regulations because of the sugar content of the finished product and the temperature at which it's packaged at has to be bottled at over 180 degrees. So very little risk involved to the public on food safety issues. So we're not under any strict regulations. Once producers get into making some other value-added products like maple barbecue sauces or mustards or salad dressings, then they come under Ag and Markets 20C licensing requirements.
Okay, and that's what you guys do more than just maple syrup. What
right,
are some of
yeah,
your other
we have
products?
A 20C kitchen here where we package all our products.
What are some of those?
We do a lot of the maple sugar candies, the granulated maple sugar, maple cream spreads. We do a spicy maple rub, maple peanut brittle, maple fudge.
Oh, I'm getting hungry.
Yeah.
we do
carry a maple barbecue sauce and a maple mustard that we do not make ourselves but buy from another maple producer.
And if people want to, pick up some maple syrup for you guys, where can they find you?
You can find our website, open 24 hours a day, at maplelandfarms.com.
Awesome. Great. And you guys ship anywhere in the world, right?
Basically. It gets expensive to ship overseas, but we ship a lot all over the country. But once in a while, one overseas, depending on the customer's needs.
Yeah, I'm sure if you're I imagine like students abroad from the region longing for a taste of home.
Oh yeah, that happens.
So one other thing I ran across when I was kind of checking out your website before the show, you are something of an international man of mystery. I guess the International Maple Syrup Institute. Tell us about your involvement with them.
I've been involved with them as a member of the New York State Association for years. I just got on their board of directors this past fall, so
congratulations.
I'm one of the board of directors for the International Maple Organization, which one of their big things they've been working on for the last several years is to standardize the maple syrup grades internationally so that each state doesn't have its own set of grades. And when they do that, they're going to do away with the grade B syrup, and it's going to be reclassified all into grade A, basically.
And then just like different variations of
grade
A?
Right, different color variations. And what we're calling extra dark grade B now will be called very dark maple syrup. So
you're kind of looking at
a strong flavor and dark color.
That's what I like to drink.
Right.
Or
and
eat or whatever.
Doing some cooking or flavoring of any kind, like that adds a lot more flavor to your whatever you're making.
Let's talk a little bit. I mean, I think we've kind of touched on the reasons why for this, but when you go to the grocery store and you're, in kind of the quote unquote maple syrup section, there's a lot of imitation maple syrups,
right.
Mrs. Butterworth's and Aunt Jemima's, and they're obviously a lot less expensive than maple syrup. So what are some of the kind of main reasons for the cost difference there?
Well, basically the labor and fuel involved in making pure maple syrup compared to all those other syrups usually use a corn syrup for their base.
So they're not even, they're getting maybe some of the commercial grade syrup that you were,
right,
putting a little bit of that, mixing it in with some corn syrup and some imitation maple flavoring.
Basically, yes.
I mean, I definitely like, you can't really compare the two, but I think that that's like one of the things that people kind of often really notice first about maple syrup is the price. And I think, you know, mentioning earlier too, you kind of were talking about, you know, the 45 to 65 gallons of sap it takes to make 1 gallon of syrup. And then obviously just imagining kind of carting those gallons around the countryside and cooking them down and the whole process.
And there's a lot more involved. We usually start early in the winter checking over our tubing system out in the woods to do any repairs that have happened between the end of the season and to get it ready for the new season. And then we spend probably about a month or more putting the taps in the trees. And then once we have the taps all in and there's sap flow, then you still have to go back through and check for leaks in the woods so you're not losing your sap on the ground.
Sure. So it sounds like, you know, if we're looking at a year in the life of a maple syrup producer, it's January 1st and you have to get out in the cold and make sure that like things are kind of ready to go. And then, you know, as we're moving into kind of the spring and where we're at now, the sap is flowing, you're collecting, you're cooking. And then what does the kind of the rest of your year look like? You know, if you're not collecting syrup, kind of how do you, what makes up the maple business in the other half of the year?
Well, in the next few weeks, we got to go back through and remove all those taps out of the trees so the trees can heal up and get all their tanks washed out for their final washing and so on. So our next month will be spent cleaning up. Besides, then we're, of course, year-round, we're bottling syrup and making our other products, not just in the spring. So, and then we do go out and do some fairs and festivals in the summer and fall and sell to supply a lot of apple orchards in the fall. And our, believe it or not, our biggest time of the year for marketing is Christmas sales. So,
sure. So then before you know it, it's time to go back out and start tapping trees again.
If we get any free time in the fall that we're not busy packing products, why we go out and maybe install some new tubing or work towards getting ready for the season, but last few years, most of that work has happened after the big Christmas rush ended. So,
right. I can imagine it gets pretty hectic packing and bottling. And so that's the thing, too. It's you're not, you know, the syrup's not coming off the evaporator going right into the you know, 8-ounce jug you're going to buy in the store. How do you kind of store it for the year?
Well, we fill 40-gallon stainless drums with hot syrup so they seal right up, and then we can store them till we get ready to pack it all the rest of the year.
Excellent. Cool.
So right now our sugar house is full drums of syrup, ready for the rest of the year.
And do you do any kind of like tours or events out in the area if people are interested in stopping by?
We always have an open house at our sugar house the last 2 weekends of March where we show people the process, offer a pancake breakfast, and so on. And then we are open by appointment the rest of the year for anybody that wants to stop by and see what's happening.
And so they can find information on those events at your website. Why don't you give us that website one more time?
MapleLandFarms.com.
Awesome. David, thanks so much for taking some time out of what I know is kind of the busiest part of your year to chat with us a little bit about maple syrup. And we hope that, you know, things go well with the rest of your season.
We thank you.
All right. Take care.
All right.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. In 2010, EscapeMaker.com won an Emmy Award for their agritourism webisode, so this year they thought, why not bring agritourism and green getaway ideas right to you? Come to the Green Getaway's Local Food and Travel Expo on April 30th at One Hanson Place, home of the Brooklyn Flea and former Williamsburg Savings Bank. Presented by Amtrak, Zipcar, and I Love New York, the carbon-free event will be a day filled with food, prizes, workshops, and kids' activities. Over 50 getaway destinations, from counties to local farms and bed and breakfasts within a day's drive or train ride of New York City, will be exhibiting on the main floor and in the huge bank vault downstairs. See what's hot in sustainable travel and receive special show-only discounts. Grow NYC will be doing workshops on the Green Market, and Appalachian Mountain Club will offer workshops on adventure bicycling and hiking via mass transit. EscapeMaker.com will be giving away over 50 getaway prizes, ranging from zipline adventure passes to an overnight stay at Mohonk Mountain House. Travel greener, eat local. Come to the expo on April 30th. Get your tickets now at www.escapemaker.com. Whole Foods Market celebrates Earth Month with the Do Something Real Film Festival, a collection of six provocative, character-driven films focused on food, environmental issues, and everyday people with a greater vision. Come see one of the six features at City Cinemas Village East from Saturday, April 16th through Thursday, April 21st, every night at 6 p.m. Learn more about the films and special events at www.dosomethingreal.com. That's www.dosomethingreal.com. Sponsored by Whole Foods Market. The following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great tasting, high quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today.